Well, hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Unlocked Show. I'm your host, Tracy Wilson, and it is an absolute pleasure to be here with you guys today on a little, I'm going to say, overcast day here on the Gold Coast, but not complaining because it has been absolutely stinking hot the last few weeks, and it's very, very nice to have a little bit of mild relief from that very hot weather. I want to say to you guys today that you know that this is the podcast that you come to where business growth and personal development collide. And this is where you'll find all the things to unlock success across your business, your family, and your life. And today we're going to be tackling the topic of happiness. Now, I want to start today's show by asking you this. I want to know, have you ever felt like you're being stressed, you're tired of feeling stressed, anxious, or just plain right unhappy? You know, have you been struggling to find the meaning and purpose in your life, going through, you know, day by day, just wondering what the heck am I doing? Well, I want to tell you that you are in absolute luck today because my very special guest, the one and only Dani DeNovo, she's an elite happiness coach, an international best-selling author of Get in a Good Mood and Actually Stay There, and Stripping Down Happy. Now, Dani knows firsthand the challenges of battling depression and anxiety, and she's dedicated her entire life now to helping others find lasting happiness and purpose. And in today's episode, we're going to be discussing some of the biggest concerns or the problems that most people face in their pursuit of happiness. You guys have seen the movie In the Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith. Well, we're going to be kind of not quite delving into that movie, but Dani's version of that, our pursuit of happiness. How do we get there and actually stay there? She's going to be sharing with you some practical tips, some strategies to help you combat things like loneliness, managing your anxiety, and how to create a life filled with joy and purpose. So without further ado, I should just really zip it and say a huge big welcome to Dani. It's fantastic to have you here.
So good to be with you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I know we were just having a bit of a chat before, and you know, I was telling you all about the weather here, and you're saying, yeah, we're just coming out of a Pittsburgh winter, which is always pretty cold, right? So that being said, I know that you've had this really interesting journey to get to where you are today, Dani. And, you know, going from being, and I'll let you tell everybody about your kind of backstory, but starting as a lawyer and still being a lawyer right now and today, but sort of the journey that you've had to get to this point where you're now helping other people, coaching them into finding happiness for themselves. How did that all come about?
Oh, it's a series of stories. I'll start with the most recent one. So yeah, I was a lawyer and I was living the life that I thought everyone wanted to live, that I thought I wanted to live, that you were supposed to live, right? I mean, I had the house, I had the job as the lawyer and had good money. I had a nice car, and I went to work every day and I was good at it. And I went to the gym and I went to the grocery store and I paid my bills and I did all the things that you were supposed to do every day, but I was miserable. And I knew I was miserable, but I never did anything to change it because I didn't know how, or even if it was something that could happen for me. I really kind of grew up and throughout my life thought I was not wired for happiness. It's just who I was. And then I had my daughter and, you know, I really enjoyed being a mom. It was finally something that I really connected with. I found real joy in it, but everything else in my life was still kind of the same. And then one day she was about a year old and I was making dinner. I was stirring a pot on the stove and I was making my Italian grandmother sauce. So very slow, deliberate strokes, like Nona taught us. And my baby was on the floor. She was playing with her bowls and spoons and she picked up this bowl and spoon and she looked up at me with her big brown eyes and she started mimicking my stirring just very slowly. And at first I thought it was the coolest thing I had ever seen because it was the first time she sort of copied mom and looked like a real human being. And I bent over and I said, yeah, just like mommy. And as soon as those words came out of my mouth, I almost fainted on top of her. I thought I was going to throw up all over my own kitchen because I suddenly realized that my daughter was copying my every single move. And it didn't matter what I said, it mattered what I did. And I was showing her how to live this very lonely and depressed and unfulfilled life. So I fell down on the floor and I grabbed her in my arms and I cried my eyes out. And I made the promise to her right then and there, I was going to learn everything there was to know about being happy for her sake. I didn't think I could be happy, but I thought if I learned how to do it, I could teach her and she could learn from a young age and avoid all of the trouble and all the suffering that I had gone through. And so that's what I did. I started studying happiness like I had studied for the bar exam to become a lawyer. I was highlighting and researching and going to every resource I could find. And the funny thing was, is the more that I kind of utilized the information that I got and implemented it, my life started to change actually pretty rapidly. And from there, it just kind of grew into this whole thing. Now, I was still just kind of using it for my own benefit at that point. And a lot of people in my life thought I was crazy for doing so because I kind of went from this very serious, you know, typical lawyer with the A personality, right, to all of a sudden talking about happiness and joy and gratitude. And a lot of people sort of exited my life pretty quickly, including my husband. But I just felt like I had found something. I had connected to something that was so important. It lit me up inside. And then one day my little brother came to me and he said, "Hey, what are you doing? And what are you reading?" And I said, "Oh, are you going to make fun of me too?" And he said, "No." He said, "Listen, you seem really happy. And I have never seen you like this before." And then he said, "If it worked for you, do you think it could work for me too?" And I hadn't even realized that he was suffering to the degree that he was. And I said, "Yeah, let's try it." And so he started implementing some things that I gave him and his life started to change. And all of a sudden I kind of put two and two together and thought, you know what? Maybe I can recreate this for other people. Maybe there's a method to this where people can avoid the pain and suffering that I had gone through or avoid their own pain and suffering by utilizing some of these techniques and exercises and ways of thinking to change their life. And that's how the happiness coach came from being the lawyer.
What a fascinating thing, and how interesting that epiphany of, oh my God, actually came from your daughter through observation of not only her observing what it is that mum is doing, and I'm going to mimic what mum's doing with her, you know, pots and pans and what have you, but then you stopping for a moment and actually realizing and observing, but not just observing, actually realizing, whoa, what's going on here? She is mimicking my every move, and realizing that it's not just about her. Oh, she's going to mimic mummy cooking at the stove cooking dinner. She is actually going to be mimicking everything that I do in my life, and having that realization that, oh my gosh, if that is the case, she's not only going to be mimicking me cooking at the stove, she's going to be mimicking me in the interactions that I have, the way that I hold myself, the things that I say, everything that I do is going to become, my daughter is going to become that mirror of what I'm putting out. I mean, that's just such an interesting thing. And I wonder how many viewers or how many listeners today actually stop, and how many of us actually take a moment to look and really observe what our little people are doing when they're around us.
Yeah, well, I think it's really easy to put on the blinders, right? I mean, I didn't want to see it. And I, to some extent, I think I was even a little bit naive about it. But growing up, you know, I didn't grow up in the happiest of households around the happiest of people. And I saw how that took a toll on so many people that I loved. And it created who I became, right? And all of a sudden, now I'm faced with this whole cycle repeating itself, and I have the choice to let it continue on the way that it was going and allow her to continue the patterns and the cycles and go through the same things that I had gone through, which were horrific, quite honestly, or I could change and help her change and help her see a different way of going forward with life and of looking at life and of living life and of being with herself. You know, things that I never knew how to do. And I really did not know how to do them because no one ever taught them to me. We don't learn about happiness in school. It's not something that you can take a course at college or university on, right? I mean, well, maybe now a little bit, but not really on how you can live a happy life. And so if you don't have those people in your life showing you how to do it, how are you supposed to know? You don't until you get to a point in your life where all of a sudden something that's going on or the circumstances make you realize that you're unhappy, right? So it's also, I think, very much a journey of learning about yourself, and all learning includes mistakes and failures and giving yourself the grace to get through those and get back on track. It is not for the faint of heart, finding your happiness. It really is a lot of work and sometimes very lonely and isolating, but I promise you that it is worth it. On the other end, it is worth it.
Well, I want to delve like right into all of that, because I think that's really where the magic is. Like when you get to this point, and I think this is for anybody, whether you're, you know, you might be feeling really, really happy right now and that is fantastic. But if you're not, then that is likely an indicator that, hey, we need to do a little bit of work here. And there are options and opportunities that are around us that can help us find what does that happy look like for us. So for you, when you were looking at that and you were like, oh my God, like I'm holding this baby right now and I'm like, I'm making a promise to you right now that I'm going to do everything in my power possible to become a really happy person so that you can emulate and you can learn from me what it truly means to become happy. What steps did you actually take? Like where did that take you?
All over the place. So I knew nothing about what I was getting myself into. And so I started in the places that I made the most sense to me that I figured might have a pathway to it, right? So I started with religion and I started with philosophy. And that's where I started studying and reading. And you get into those sort of texts and it leads you to other research. It leads you to other authors. So I started reading more self-development people, business development people, anyone I could get my hands on that I thought might have an answer to this question of what is happiness? How do I get there and how do I stay there? So I was reading and studying with monks and with shaman and, you know, anybody that I thought might have an inkling of what this whole thing was about, right? Mm-hmm. And what happened was I just started trying things on to see if they worked for me, right? Okay, you say this works, let me try it. And I would try it for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Give it enough time that I could honestly say to myself, I've given this a fair shot, right? And then I was keeping data. I was keeping statistics. Mm-hmm. How am I feeling? What is changing? What's going on in my life? So that I had some results to be able to show myself, okay, this is working. This is not working. Okay. Maybe it's working a little bit. Can we tweak it a little bit? What can we do? What can we add to it? What can we take away? And I was really just playing with it. I was totally obsessed with it. I just couldn't get away from it, which is probably why it happened so quickly for me. Mm-hmm. But basically what it comes down to is this, is there's no necessarily one way to get there, but you are going to have to allow yourself that trial and error period. And that's very, very scary for a lot of reasons, right? Number one is, mm-hmm. like I said, the people in your life are going to have opinions about your changed behavior or your changed outlook or the things that you're doing differently or the things that they don't think fit with you. You're going to have to be brave. If you want to be happy, you have to be brave. I think that's probably the number one takeaway that I've gotten from all of this. You have to be very, very honest with yourself. And then once you are honest with yourself, you have to be brave enough to act in conformity with what you've told yourself. And that includes, you know, not listening to society, not listening to friends, family, kids, your spouse, whatever. You've got to really allow yourself that freedom to pull away and try these things out and see what works for you.
Such an interesting thing. So this kind of curious obsession that started to take place, right? I'm really curious. How do these people become happy trying things? I mean, when you say, you know, you've got to try things for a set period of time and you just hit 30, 60, 90 days out of that. And I know you know, being someone who's obviously interested in the finer detail, which, you know, as a lawyer, you would be, you know, trying to understand what are some of the things that work. Like, how did you identify those? Like, how did you realize each and every day, gosh, I implemented this today or, you know, 2 weeks ago, and this has been the impact or this has been the effect on me? Maybe you could give us some, you know, idea of what that looked like and even some examples of some things that actually happened.
Well, when I had gotten out of my marriage and when I had taken this on, I was not in the best frame of mind as far as self-worth and self-esteem were. I I had such a lack of self-worth that I could not make eye contact with myself in my own bathroom mirror. I would catch my glance and I would look away. I just didn't think that I was worthy of very much anything. And I had been broken down over a period of time for a lot of reasons. And I had allowed that to occur. And I knew that that was definitely one thing that I needed to change. One of the mentors that I started working early on with was a man by the name of Bob Proctor. And Bob passed away last year. But he was someone who took me under his wing a bit and helped me with something. And I remember going to him one day and saying, you know, Bob, how do I get rid of the shame of things of the past? And he just looked at me and he said, you just do. And I just kind of nodded my head. And like, I knew he was right in some regard, but I didn't really know what he meant either. And he said, now, listen, that's not the answer that you want to hear right now. He said, but if you stick with this and you do the things I tell you to do, you're going to start to see changes. One of the first things he had me do was write out a sentence, an affirmation. And I had to do it 100 times a day, every single day. And then I had to text him every time I had finished it. And if I missed a day, I had to start over at day one. And he said that this was going to be something I was going to do for him for 90 days. And I remember sitting down and starting writing this out, this affirmation out about my self-worth. And I did not believe it. I was lying to myself. I did not believe the words that were going down on that paper every single day. But I kept going day one, day two, day three. And I got into the second month, day 31, day 32, right? And still nothing had really changed. And then I remember sitting down and writing down day 66 and starting to write out those sentences. And all of a sudden, something was different. I believed what I was writing. I identified with it. It was like it had become a part of me all of a sudden. And it was not this far off idea that I could never imagine being possible for myself. It was actually part of me now. So I guess that's one sort of concrete thing that I can link to, because I still have that piece of paper with day 66 on it where I wrote down those things and they started to come to mind. Another thing that I like to do a lot of is mirror work. So repeating those affirmations to myself in the mirror, because I had such a difficult time even looking at myself. This was really difficult for me to do, but it is one of the quickest ways to change your belief about yourself. And you can definitely tell if you stick with this and do it consistently when that light switch sort of goes off. All of a sudden it's different and it's something you're going to feel inside of you. It's not something that I can pinpoint to and say, you know, this is going to be different. Or that's going to be different. You're just going to be different and you're going to know it. So it was cues like that, that I was paying attention to more than anything. I was also paying attention to how people were reacting to me in public, especially strangers, reacting to how things were going at work, how money was coming in, all the things in my life that I had always, like, you know, struggled with or had stress around or anxiety over. I was paying attention to those things and seeing what was easier, what was lighter, what was more fun, what was more enjoyable for me. And of course, I paid very close attention to my relationship with my daughter as well. And so I was just kind of tracking these pseudo statistics, if you will, on each of these different areas of what was changing. And I'm not saying that every day was great. It's not a linear progression by any stretch, but generally speaking, there was a lot more good than there was bad. And I started to get into this momentum. And when you get into the momentum of focusing on the good and having the good around you, you see more and more good stuff come in and less of negativity.
I mean, that's right. I mean, interesting that you would talk about this cult kind of, I mean, Bob Proctor, amazing man. So to have somebody like that as kind of a mentor and saying to you, you know, yeah, just do, you just let it go. And then giving you those very practical steps to do in terms of, you know, something that's quite simple, an affirmation. But most people dismiss that as being, oh, a silly thing to do, you know, but now you stuck with it for that 66 days. And then all of a sudden, like you said, you just do, you just feel different. It just is a different way of being at that time. And like you say, I would imagine that as you started to do these things, that's when your brother, your little brother's like, hey, Danny, like something's different with you. You're like so different now. You seem to be really happy. What's going on? And can I get a piece of that? You know, that's what you sort of, not just the people around you, but you're saying you're strangers start to gravitate to you.
They do. Yeah. I'll be waiting in line for coffee now and somebody will come up and just start telling me their story and what's going on in their life and why, you know, this is happening. And, you know, for the duration of just, you know, a few minutes, I get their entire life story. And at this point, I'm pretty tuned into people's pain, right? I really do feel like I have a kind of sense of where your pain is and why it's there and maybe how I can help you with it. Right. And so I'd like to offer a little bit of advice to people as we're waiting for our lattes. Right. But it is funny how they just kind of know that there's something that you see that's a little bit different. And look, it's not like I just ended up here by any stretch of the imagination. Right? I did a lot of work and just to give you an idea of how bad I know it can be. I remember when I checked myself into the mental institution for the second time and the doctors there told me there was nothing else that they could do for me. Now, I was incredibly suicidal. I knew that if I left, that there was no way that I was going to make it because I did not want to live anymore. And I didn't have a concrete necessary reason why. It's not like I had grown up in, you know, poverty or seen a lot of violence or anything along those lines. I had a pretty normal childhood. I grew up riding horses. I went to a good school. I got good grades. I had friends. But around the age of 13, I started to feel this shift in me and went to my parents and said, "Hey, I think I'm sick because I'm feeling really off. I'm feeling tired. I'm not interested in the same things as I used to be. I think I'm sick." So eventually they took me to the doctor and of course they can't find anything wrong with me. And then one day at 16, I'm sitting across the table from this woman who's asking me what's going on. And all of a sudden she says, "Honey, you're depressed." And I said, I don't even really know what that means, but I don't think that I am because I go to a good school and I have a horse and I have friends, but I don't have anything to be depressed about. And she said, "Well, honey, I think you're depressed." And she picks up the phone and calls my doctor. Next thing I know, I'm on medication at 16. But none of the medication was helping. It was just making things worse. And I was foggy and my pupils were dilated. So I was always wearing sunglasses. I had these horrible headaches. It just got so bad to the point where at 19, here I am in the mental institution begging them to help me. And they're telling me there's nothing else that they can do for me. That they basically figured my life was over, that I was going to succeed in suicide. And that was another case that they could just chalk up to the fact that there was some sort of genetic issue or whatever else, right? So I really had been told that I was not wired for happiness. So I went to the head psychiatrist and I said, "Look, I need something. You've got to give me one more option." And she said, "The only thing that we have left for you is electroshock therapy." And I said, "Okay, well, what do we do?" And she said, "Well, you have to sign here." And I was 19. I was, you know, in the U.S. I was of majority age. I could sign the contract. And the next thing I know, they got me in the morning. You know, I'm in a full lockdown unit. I have no idea what's going on. There's no one there advocating for me. My parents just, you know, they didn't know what else to do. So they were just kind of a little bit distant with everything at that point. And they wheel me into this secret part of the mental institution, right, where nobody knows about. And everyone is masked up and ready for surgery. And I'm very confused. I don't understand what's going on here. I'm not here for surgery. And they said, "Well, you're going under anesthesia." And they shove this medicine cup in my face. And they're like, "Here, take these pills, but you can't have any water." And I just remember saying, "Oh, my goodness, no more medication, please. I can't take anymore." And the one nurse said, "No, honey, it's Tylenol. Trust me, you'll be happy you took it later." So I choked these pills down and they strapped me down to this gurney and they wheel me into this room through these huge double doors, these big brass metal doors, into this room that looks like something out of Frankenstein's laboratory. And there's gadgets and whirring and people scurrying around. And I'm scared now because I really don't understand what's going on. And I started to cry. And I remember asking for someone to hold my hand and then the anesthesia kicked in and they pushed my head back and they strapped it down. And as my head hit the pillow behind me, I saw this giant man come at me with these two big metal probes and then it went dark. And then when I woke up at first, I kind of thought that I had succeeded. I thought that I was dead, but then I realized where I was and I thanked goodness that I had taken that Tylenol because I felt like I had been hit in the head with a sledgehammer. And I went through those treatments every other day for a series of weeks. I wasn't getting any better, but I was told this was the process. This is what we were doing. And then one day I was with that same little brother that I mentioned before at dinner. And he starts telling a story about he and I growing up and riding our ponies together. And it was a very important memory for him. He was very excited about this. And he had, you know, all this excitement around it and all these details. And we went here. And Dad said we couldn't go there, but we went there anyway. And then we jumped over the pond. Remember, and we got all wet and this happened. And then we went here and blah, blah, blah. And he's just going on and on and on, very excited. I have zero recollection of this day. I have no idea what he's talking about. And he's getting visibly upset now. How can you not remember? And he's, you know, giving me more and more details. Mm-hmm. And I could see how upset he was. So I finally said, oh, yeah, yeah. And I just kind of repeated some stuff back to him. And he said, yeah, yeah, you remember. I said, oh, yeah. And I pushed myself away from the dinner table and I ran into my bedroom and I pulled my photo album out from underneath my bed. And I started looking through the pictures of my childhood and I couldn't remember anything. And I realized my entire memory was leaving, going through these treatments. My body was breaking down. I had horrible, horrible headaches. So I finally went in and I said, look, we don't have to do this anymore. I'm okay. I'm not depressed anymore. And they said, okay, show us. And I said, okay, so I had to do a list of things. I had to get a part-time job. I had to get re-enrolled back in school because I had dropped out of college and all these things. And I just started checking off all the things they told me to do. And I went around pretending like I was happy because I could not bear the thought of having to go back through those treatments anymore. And I went out and pretended to be happy, like I think a lot of people do, right? Mm-hmm. Again, I was functioning. I was going to the gym. I was going to cocktail parties. I was killing it in the courtroom, but I was just dying inside. So I really do understand what it's like to be at rock bottom and how hard it really can be to pull yourself up out of that. There were days when it just took everything inside of me to go outside for a few minutes just to get some sunshine or some fresh air and even feel like I was living, right? So when people, some coaches are saying to you, like, have gratitude or smile and you'll feel better, right? I know that that's not going to be enough to get you up out of all of this. So again, it took a lot for me. Not only did I have to deal with everything from the past, and all of the reasons why I probably became depressed in the first place, but dealt with all of the trauma that I did to myself by pretending to be happy and not listen to my heart for all of those years and just take all of that feeling that was giving me this information that was screaming change and I refused to do it, right? And you just take it and you press it down day after day because you think it's not possible for you, or you think it's too late in life, or you don't have the money, you don't have the time, you're stuck now, right? I've heard every excuse you can possibly think of, and I don't accept any of them because, again, I have been there. And I know that if I can do it, that you can do it too. I'm not saying it will be easy. Again, I am saying that it is worth it.
It's possible. And when you get to the other side, it's worth it. Well, because, like, you know, hearing your story, Danny, I mean, you know, as you're telling that, it's emotional.
It is.
You know, listening to what you had to go through, and my immediate response wants to say, look, I'm really, really sorry that you had to go through that. But at the same time, it's like amazing, strong, independent, inspiring woman has come out the other side of that, who is now, you know, using everything that she knows in her life to now create and cultivate happiness in herself and everybody else around her. And, you know, I'm a believer that often these things happen in our life for, you know, for a reason,
of course,
not always nice, but, you know, we get out the other side. And if we can use that for good, then that's, you know, you say it's worth it. It was worth you at this point now being the strong, independent, brave woman that you are today. And this is where I want to go with this, because I think that story is definitely a story of, you know, inspiration and somebody who is extremely brave, who no matter what was going on, you knew, I have to ask for help. There's more to this. I'm not ready to give up. I need to just keep asking. And, you know, I had to go through some horrific things, to get to the point that you're at today. So I want you to delve a little bit more into that. You talk about you've got to be brave. Now, tell us a little bit more about that, because that story that you've just told, I know it will be hitting the heartstrings of every listener that's listening today. So tell us about being brave.
When you look inside of yourself and you quiet, you know, we've got these voices in our head all day long coming from so many different places and chirp, chirp, chirp all day long. And how do you even know which voice is the right voice? Because some of them might be you, some of them might not be you. They're just voices you've taken on, these things that you've come to believe about yourself. And so I think the bravery really starts with being able to sit and quiet those voices and stop listening to the head and start listening to the heart, which is a hard thing to do. And again, not something that's taught and not something that's easy to get to. But once you're able to listen to that voice and you recognize it and you know that that's it, the one true voice, it will tell you everything that you need to know about your happiness. Again, these are not going to be easy things that you necessarily have to get over, but being brave starts with being really honest with who you are, where you are, how you got there, how you contributed to being where you are right now, the things that you allowed to happen, the things that you haven't changed, and not looking at it from an angle of being super critical or being judgmental or angry with yourself, right? That goes back to the question that I asked Bob, how do you get rid of the shame, right? You've got to be able to forgive and let go of all of that and realize you were doing the best that you could at the time with what you knew then. But that doesn't give you the excuse to keep living the same way. And so being brave first, you know, means looking into that voice, being honest with yourself what it means, and then admitting to yourself that you have to change. And then the next step in that bravery is doing something to actually change. And again, being able to do it in the face of looking foolish, looking stupid, looking like you don't belong, feeling like you're not good enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not smart enough. You've got to really get over all of those things and just start trying things. And this is one place where I think my brother really got hung up, because he was kind of like, I don't know what I want to do. Like, you know, you keep saying about like, go do the things you like to do. I don't even know what I like to do. And my advice was just go start doing stuff. And he's like, well, what if I'm not good at it? Or what if I do it 3 times and I hate it and I want to quit? And I'm like, then you quit. Like, why is there so much shame around, you know, us, you know, trying to grow as human beings just because we became an adult? We're not allowed to try new things. We're not allowed to experience and explore and, you know, see if we like it. Why can't we do that anymore? So it's also being brave enough to, you know, give yourself that space to go out and try. And like I said, you're going to fail. I mean, my motto for the longest time was one, you know, creating myself one epic failure at a time, right? How bad can I screw this up is really the point that I got to. And when I got to that point of being that ridiculous, you know, stuff didn't seem as scary. Like, I know I'm going to screw it up. It's just a matter of how bad can I do it? So let's see how bad I can do it. Let's really get in there and try. And you'll find a lot of times that you know, are more successful than you ever think you would be.
It isn't. I mean, that's great, because, you know, in terms of removing that obstacle of or fear of failure, I'm just going to give this a go. And actually, my goal is going to be how badly can I screw this up? Like, how bad can it get? And if it gets there, well, hey, and it works out, that is fantastic. So I've got this question for you. So in terms of, like, what's your opinion of the biggest obstacle that people often face when it comes to trying to create lasting happiness in their life? Like, what's the one thing that they trip over constantly?
Your self-image. You don't think that you're worthy of it. You give yourself a bunch of excuses because you've taken on these beliefs over time, these stories about yourself that you've created that you believe are true. And becoming happy is about changing your beliefs about a lot of things, about yourself, most importantly. So if you can kind of get over this whole idea of I'm not this, and so I can't be that, and just allowing yourself to explore without putting barriers or roadblocks in your own way, it feels very reckless. If you're someone who's used to sort of dotting your I's and crossing your T's and, you know, you're in a routine or whatever else, to all of a sudden just sort of be living life, it feels, you know, like you're kind of just throwing everything to the wall and see what sticks. It doesn't feel responsible. And I think that's one place that sort of trips us up. But as soon as somebody validates that, as soon as someone says, oh, is that really the best use of your time or the best use of your money? Or honey, those are the glory days. Those days are over. You know, anytime anyone reinforces that, is you're going to go down really fast. So what you got to do is it's got to be so important to you that it doesn't matter what anyone else has to think about it, right? Like for me, it was helping my daughter, because I was not going to let my daughter go through electroshock therapy treatments the way that I had been tortured, right? So it was so important for me at that point that I had to succeed at figuring this thing out. You've got to figure it out for you. At the time, the clock is ticking, right? And I don't want to be the person who knows that I have very little time left and that I didn't leave it all on the field, so to speak, right? I'm not saying that I don't get hung up on things and that I don't get scared and that I don't hesitate or falter, but I really do try to push myself through that as quickly as I possibly can, because at any given time, I know that, you know, the clock's going to end. And am I going to be able to be honest with myself and say, I did, or I tried at least everything that I wanted to do, or was I too scared to live? And I certainly want my daughter to live her life the same way as well. And I know I have to model it in order for her to do it. And so every day when I wake up, I see two things. I see a picture of my daughter and I see a sign that says, when you feel like quitting, remember why you started. And that's the jolt to get out of bed and see what we can screw up today.
I read something the other day that really put, you know, this, what you're talking about here into perspective in terms of, you know, the time that we have. And this was about, you know, the average person lives to 82 years old. And so therefore, if you put that into perspective, that's 82 summers, 82 winters, 82 birthdays, 82 Christmases.
Which doesn't sound like very much, does it?
It's not many. No. When you put it into perspective like that, that conversation that you've just had around, you know, I'm every minute of every day is important to me. It is, how do, can I be the best possible person I can be in this moment in order to cultivate the most amount of happiness for me in this moment? Because every single minute that goes by is eating into that 82 years or 82 summers, Christmases, so on and so forth that we have. The other thing that is really interesting here is that this concept of kind of, you've talked a lot about this and alluded to it. It's like our self-chatter. And I think where you started with all of this was really being quite introspective and going, what's going on inside of me? What's going on up here? What's the narrative, the story that I'm continuously telling myself? And little by little, changing that story that's being told by looking at yourself in the mirror, saying some different things, and almost reprogramming yourself to become a completely new identity. You've created this new identity for yourself that has stepped into this new world of happiness.
It is a new identity. I mean, it's the identity that I wanted to create for myself. Right. I mean, I was told that I was not a happy person. I was wired this way. I was told a lot of things about myself from a young age. I was told that I was fat. And so guess what? I carried a lot of extra weight throughout many different parts of my lifetime because I formed this belief. I formed this story around it. You know, my father passed away when he was pretty young. And I remember growing up and watching him sort of go through this adoption of this belief over time about himself and his life. And it contributed a lot to, quite honestly, my own depression. But when I remember being younger, I remember him being very, you know, hungry and very ambitious and loving his work. And as time went on, he became very quiet. He became very isolated. I believe he thought that he was failing more than he was succeeding. But I think most importantly, what he was doing is he wasn't listening to his heart. And I'm sure that his heart was telling him some things that he didn't want to have to deal with, that were very hard for him to have to deal with as a man, as a father, as a husband, whatever. But I physically saw that heart start to get walled off a little bit at a time. And what I will tell you is that as that continues, you're going to get signs that you aren't paying attention, you know, that you aren't happy, that you aren't living the way that you're meant to live, and you're going to ignore them. And so the signs are going to get louder, and they're going to get more aggressive, and they're going to turn into things like illness and disease and everything else. And my father had a massive heart attack and stroke and died very young. Because I honestly believe his heart couldn't take anymore. He had ignored it for so long and shut it down for so long and been living with this unhappiness for so long that it was an easier way to get out of it than to have to go in and try and deal with it. So I knew
the concept, doesn't it, of like, it'll eat you up.
It will.
If you allow it to, it'll eat you up.
But it seemed like all of that just came to the forefront of my head that day that my daughter was mimicking me. All of a sudden it made sense about how important it was to change. And like I said, I didn't have any idea how to do that, but I knew that what I was doing was not working and that it wasn't the right way. And that everything I had learned up until that point was not serving me. I was not living a happy life. And to me, it almost, as silly as it sounds, it almost made more sense to pretend to live differently and see if I could even find a little bit of joy in that than to keep going the way that I was going. Because honestly, if my daughter had not come along, I don't think that I would have made it. I would have regressed back into the suicidal tendencies that I had gone through the first time. And honestly, I probably wouldn't have found a reason to keep going at that point. So, as you say, everything happens for a reason, but there are little things that are waking you up every single day and you don't pay attention to them, or you want to ignore them, or you want to pretend they're not there. And then the next thing you know, the universe is breaking down your front door and you're wondering why. How did this happen? I'm so unlucky. Well, no, you've been warned. You just didn't want to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is a message that we need to be here. We don't even take stock of that, right? We don't even pay attention to the little things that are happening. And I think one of the things that you can really do in your life right now is actually stop and take a look around. Are good things coming to you? You know, are things turning out the right way? Is your business growing? Like when good things are happening, that's usually an indicator that you're actually on the right track. You're for want of it, vibrating at the right kind of frequency to draw in all of the nice things into your life. And when things are not going so well, maybe, you know, you can't find a place to live, maybe your family's not going right, maybe you've got health issues and so on and so forth, that's often an indicator that something else deep inside is not quite right.
It could be an indicator. It could also be a time for you to really learn about your happiness because...
Yeah.
We want to say right and wrong and good and bad. And the truth is, none of it is good or bad or right or wrong. It just is. And it just depends on your perspective and how you choose to look at it. That's where true happiness comes from. You were saying we've got 82 Christmases, 82 summers, 82 whatever. Each moment in your life is your life. I mean, whether you see it as good or bad or not, it belongs to you. And are you going to look at it for what it could be? You know, if it's not a particularly happy moment, what are you learning? What are you getting from this? What is it giving to you? Because it is giving you something. There's some sort of information there. And what I have learned by hitting rock bottom more than once is I need very little to be happy. I really do. It is really in the very small moments of each and every day and just how you choose to look at things.
I think that there is really worthy of us delving a little deeper into. So when you say, you know, I've realized I've had the big car, I've had the flash house, I've had all the things that society sort of reflects back and says, you've made it, you're doing well, you're successful, you should be, you're a happy person, you should be happy because you've got all this stuff. And now you've taken this journey and now you've realized, do you know what? It doesn't really take that much for me to be a really happy person. So tell us about that. What does it take for, like, what is true happiness for you? What have you found it takes to make you happy?
Happiness for me is a sustainable state, right? Where I feel at peace and where I feel connected to the universe and to the people around me, which is a little bit woo-woo, but I can break it down a little bit more than that. I need to feel like I'm have some sort of purpose. And I think a lot of people get hung up on this idea because they think my purpose has to be this big, grandiose thing. It's got to be huge. And it doesn't. It doesn't. Your purpose could be that you have a very small flower garden and you tend to it every single day and every single year. And you just get so much joy and satisfaction out of doing that. Your purpose could be, you know, you have a dog and you walk it every day and the two of you have a great friendship together. I mean, it can be something so small and you can find appreciation in the tiniest of things, a butterfly going past you, the sun shining, a good cup of coffee. I mean, it doesn't have to be huge, but when you allow yourself just the awareness to connect with those little itty bitty things and those little things throughout the day that happen that make us feel like we belong together, that's where the happiness lies. I was in a coffee shop before I came here and this dad came in with his baby and one of those little harnesses and the baby just looked up and kind of gave me this look. It was too little to even smile, but it recognized me and it lit up. And not too long ago, I wouldn't have even noticed if that had occurred, but now it completely made my day because I know that my heart, my soul was recognized, not just how we perceive each other physically and what you can do for me and what I can do for you. It's just an acknowledgement of being. That is the most, I think, amazing state that you can be in. And when you can learn to just bring yourself back there, you don't even have to be there all the time. It's just that bring yourself back throughout the day. You can harness so much amazing energy and feel so good just by doing that. But it takes a lot of awareness and you have to be consistent. If I want to go to the gym, if I want muscles, I got to go to the gym every single day. And then when I get in the shape that I want to be in, I don't get to stop going to the gym, right? If I want to maintain it, I've got to keep going. And your happiness is the same way. It needs your attention every single day. It should be non-negotiable. It should be the first thing you do. And you should not feel selfish in doing it because if you don't do that, you can't do anything for anyone else.
So true. So let's talk a little bit about the books that you've written. So you've got a couple of books that you've written. One, of course, is a best-selling, got to best-selling author status. And the one I want to talk about in particular is the one, titled Get in a Good Mood and Stay There. So let's talk a little bit about that book. Why did you decide to write that? Who's kind of reading it these days? And maybe just a couple of takeaways. If somebody was to read that, what could they expect to get out of that book?
That was the first book that I wrote. And it was a little bit of a chronicle of my journey of this trial and error period I was talking about, right? What did I try? What worked? What didn't work? And how did I know it worked? And it was just kind of following piece by piece, a little bit of what I tried on, what fit and what didn't fit, and how you could try it on too. Who's reading it these days? I think people who know that they need to change. They need to change some aspect of the way that they're doing things, but they're not really sure where to start. I think I give a great example of it doesn't matter. Just start. Just pick a place and start. And what I think that I got out of that whole journey more than anything was this. You have to keep going. And when you're depressed, when you're lonely, when you feel like your life is falling apart, there's lots of people saying a lot of different things and a lot of it just kind of comes over as noise. But if you keep searching for the answer, if you keep going, sooner or later, somebody you come across is going to say something in a way that clicks. And all of a sudden you're going to say, oh, that resonates. I get that. I understand that now. And that little piece, that little breadcrumb is going to lead you to the next little piece and the next little piece and the next little piece. And it's going to slowly unfold in front of you. It's not like it's going to hit you in the face all of a sudden. Nothing about happiness ever rang my front doorbell, unfortunately. I had to go looking for it. But if you keep looking, you will find it. And it may feel like forever, and it may feel like it's a really tough search, but I promise you, if you keep going, you will be rewarded for it.
So, I mean, what I like about this particular book and the fact that you have kind of, you know, written the journey, the things that you did into this amazing book, is that other people can read it and they too then can go, okay, well, I resonate with that part. I can do that piece. And in the book, I know you talk a lot about some of the things that you can do practically. You know, go and do this, and this will make, you know, and you can try this out. Like you said all along in today's conversation, is you've just got to try things out for size. Have a go. Have a try of it. If it fits you and it feels good, keep it on. If it doesn't, well, you know, go try the next outfit on and give that a go until you find almost the recipe or the outfits, so to speak, that actually light you up, that feel good for you, and you continue to wear and do those things.
And you might find them in places that you didn't expect. So it's really important to kind of, again, be brave and really push yourself outside of those limits, those self-confining things. You know, I'm not this kind of person. I would never do this. I would never be good at that. Well, go try it. Go try it. Give it a fair shake. Really, you know, don't just kind of like, I tried it. No, really try it. Be honest with yourself that you really tried. Again, if you fail, who cares? I mean, we're just afraid of being seen as failing more than anything else. And if you don't care about that anymore, then you're really going to risk some things and go out there, and you're going to find things that you never thought were out there, right? I never thought I would be on television talking to people about being happy. I couldn't look at myself in my own mirror, and then I'm going to go on TV. But, you know, all of a sudden, it opened up this whole world of me being able to help people, people who are really suffering, people who aren't talking about the scary parts of mental illness and mental health. You know, people like me don't make it. People who go through electroshock therapy, they don't make it. They end up succeeding with suicide. They become addicts and they overdose. A lot of different things happen, right? But nobody wants to talk about that, or how medication didn't work for them, or how, you know, the system didn't work for them or just blew them off and never helped them. But now all of a sudden I can connect with so many people who feel the same way. And that would have never have been there if I hadn't tried out some of these ridiculous things.
Well, good on you for just being, you know, persevering and knowing that, just having that knowing there's something better. I have to get through this, because on the other side of this struggle and, you know, trauma that I'm going through right now is something amazing. And you now, like you say, being on television all over the world and sharing your message that is going to help and is impacting thousands and thousands and thousands of people is amazing. So I know that people that are listening today are going to be like, I want a piece of that. Like your brother, they'll be sitting there thinking, how do I now take my life and actually create this abundance of happiness for myself? So I want to let everybody know where they can go. So I'm going to pop up on the screen right now. If you're watching today, it's Danny DeNovo, DannieDeNovo.com. You can head on over to Danny's website. She's got a bunch of things on there. I'm going to let her in a moment tell you about something amazing that she's got coming up that you may too wish to be a part of. That's also where you can get a copy of both of those books. So you can get your hands on Get in a Good Mood and Stay There. So you can get that book, and then also a couple of other books that she's got on her website as well. As if you want to hear more from Danny, you want to tune in and listen to what she's got to say, and maybe, you know, do some of the things that she has been sharing with you today, but in a much bigger way, then I would also encourage you to go and find her on iTunes and on any other podcasting platform, the Danny DeNovo podcast. That's where you can find her, and you too can listen to more of what Danny's got to say. She tells you more about her story and her journey, and also what she's doing these days to help other people really unlock the happiness that's inside of them. So, Danny, do you want to, before we sort of round out today's show, do you want to tell everybody what you've got coming up? I believe you've got something amazing happening on the 23rd of March. Tell us all about it.
I am starting a free happiness webinar starting, as you said, Thursdays. We're going to run on starting March 23rd, and I'm going to have some special guests on, but really going to focus on practical guides and exercises and things that you can do day in and day out to sort of help you get to happy and stay there, and talk about the things that get in the way of doing that, and basically how you can live in that energy that I was talking about, so you can feel that connectedness and that just that surge of goodness throughout the day, right? You can really measure how happy you are by how you're feeling internally. And I want to show you how to do that.
Beautiful. And the place that you guys go, just a reminder, is over to DaniDeNovo.com. That's where you can get copies of her book. You can find out more about Dani, connect with her. And if you so wish, you can join her upcoming webinar series. So I want to say a huge big thank you to you today, Dani, for being such an amazing guest. It's fantastic to talk to somebody who just oozes excitement about their life and where you've been, but what you're actually doing now and the impact that you are making to lots and lots of people all over the world. So thank you very, very much for your time today. And for those of you who have tuned in and you've gone, man, that was actually a really good show. There was some stuff that Dani and Tracy spoke about today that I thought was great and it's helped me, then it's most likely going to help somebody else that you know. So please do yourself and your friend a favor and share this episode with them so that they too can learn how to create happiness, an abundance of happiness in their life. For those of you that are watching that are avid listeners of The Unlock Show, I want to say thank you very much for doing that. Every single week, I bring to you an amazing guest from all over the world sharing their secrets, their tools, their resources, their knowledge to actually how to unlock, you know, an amazing business, family, and life for yourself. And I want to make sure that you guys have the opportunity to tune in every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Brisbane time is when we go live. If you can't make to the live episodes, not a problem. Go and find us on all of the major podcasting platforms, and you'll be able to listen to the podcast version of The Unlock Show with me, Tracy Wilson. Until next week, I want to say thank you very much, everybody. As you know, I'll be back again with another awesome guest next week. But for today, I want to say a huge thank you to Dani. And if you've got any questions, make sure you put them into the comment sections on Facebook, YouTube, and also in LinkedIn. And we'll make sure that we get back to you with any with those answers that you have to those questions. Thanks very much, Dani. And we'll hopefully have you back again as a guest another time.
Oh, it's been so great. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone. As you know, I always finish the show with go and live your life unlocked, because there is just no other way. Bye for now.